here. Truly, it is my first time here in Manhattan, Kansas, and I'm really enjoying myself. Looking forward to the lab sessions tomorrow. Okay, talking about looking at fertility in beef bulls, I really enjoy working with bulls, and I also enjoy talking about them, so look forward to sharing some ideas with you. Okay, first let's talk about some challenges in the beef industry. There's lots of history and tradition in the beef industry, which is a really good thing up to a point, but we also better be willing to move ahead and to do things somewhat differently. Historically, beef cows calved in May, and beef bulls were sold at 2 years of age, but that has radically changed. So now we've got cows calving earlier and earlier in the year. One of the challenges with that is that we tend to crowd animals together. We have a lot more infectious diseases, including respiratory disease, scours. We also have to breed cows back before the grass emerges, so we have to feed large amounts of stored feeds. Many bulls are sold as yearlings, and now we have more and more production sales, and so people want to sell their bulls early. While there's still lots of buyers, once people have bought bulls, they stop going to bull sales. So then it becomes a real challenge to get bulls to pass the bull breeding soundness prior to or very early in the year, so that they're able to get into those early sales. Bull requirements, what does a bull do? Well, he has to identify cows in estrus. He's got to be able to mount those cows. He's got to be able to successfully breed those cows, deliver large numbers of normal fertile sperm. If any of these are deficient, the bull will not be a functional breeder. He can have fabulous sperm. He's got a sore back. He's unable to achieve intermission. He's not going to get very many cows pregnant. In general, larger testes produce more and better sperm, up to a scrotal circumference of around 35, 37 centimeters, and then it reaches something of a plateau. We want to feed the bull to reach genetic potential for testis size, and we'll really talk about this, about early feeding and about later feeding, and what we should do, and perhaps more importantly, what we should not do. We want the bull to be a functional breeder for many, many years, to amortize the cost of that bull over a longer interval. Do I need to speak closer? Oh, there we go. That's better. Effects of bull nutrition. We did some work a number of years ago with beef bulls, more recently with dairy bulls. Some really fascinating stuff. Most of the work historically was done after weaning. We'll talk a little bit about that. Very limited amounts of work done very early in life, and this is some of the really, really key studies. So we did a number of experiments. This is one of them. In this particular experiment, we had a control group of medium nutrition. That was one-third of the bulls. We fed them that medium nutrition from 10 weeks to 70 weeks. These were beef bulls, but we weaned them early so we could modulate the nutrition. We also had two experimental groups. They were both fed low nutrition during calfhood, and then which is from 10 weeks through to 26 weeks. After that, half of those bulls went on to a high nutrition, and the other half went on to medium nutrition. So overall, we had three groups. We had one group which was medium. So they got medium nutrition from 10 weeks through to 70 weeks. A second group was low nutrition from 10 weeks to 26 weeks. And thereafter, they went on medium. And the third group, low initially, and then they went on high, creating our three groups. These are the graphs for testicular development. You can think of these as the scrotal circumference because they're essentially the same thing. Early on, we have this diversion here. The bulls on the low had their testes growing at a slower pace than the bulls that were on medium nutrition. And on the figure on the right, this is not working. On the figure on the right, you can see testicular size, or if you think of it as scrotal circumference. These are the bulls that were on medium. Their testes grew on this plateau. The bulls that were initially on low, you can see they were permanently lower. These bulls here in the middle, even though after 30 weeks, we put them onto high nutrition, you can see that they never ever caught up to the other bulls. And the bulls that were on low and then on medium, they had the smallest size testes throughout the entire study. We sent these bulls to slaughter somewhere between about 65 and 70 weeks. at 70 weeks at slaughter. We've got paired testis weights in these bulls, approximately 600 grams. In the medium bulls, the bulls that were restricted early on had testes that were roughly 20% smaller. The bulls that were initially low and then were supplemented were more or less in the middle. In terms of onset of puberty, the bulls that were medium reached puberty approximately 30 days earlier than the bulls that were on low and then medium. So we, by restricting these bulls early on, we delayed puberty, we made their testes smaller. We had some compensation when we fed them a little better, but we could not get them back to the same level. We did a second study. In this study, we only had two groups. We looked at a group of bulls that were fed medium nutrition throughout the entire time, from basically 10 weeks through to 74 weeks. We had a second group, which we supplemented early on, and they got high nutrition from 10 weeks until 30 weeks, and then they went on to a medium nutrition diet. So overall, we had a control group fed medium throughout, and the second group then was fed high initially and then medium. And putting this into context, for us, medium was more or less 100% of requirements for both energy and protein, and high was about 130% of requirements for energy and protein. Oh, okay. Thank you. So the medium group, that's better. The medium group was 100% for energy and protein. The high group was about 130% for energy and protein. And in the previous study with the low, that was about 70%. So we went about 30% above and 30% below requirements, and all bulls got all the minerals and all the vitamins that they needed. This is body weight in those bulls. Again, we had the one group which was fed medium throughout the entire time. The other group was supplemented early, from roughly 10 until 30 weeks. You can see that the bulls that were supplemented early, even though after 30 weeks they all got the medium diet, they remained larger throughout the entire study. Testis size, again, even though we only supplemented prior to 30 weeks, you can see these bulls that were supplemented early were on a different trajectory. So we created bulls with larger testes. We sent these bulls to slaughter about 65, 70 weeks. The bulls that were initially on high reached puberty a little bit earlier, but not significantly. This is where it gets very interesting. At slaughter, the bulls that were initially supplemented had testes about 20% larger. Perhaps more importantly, they had roughly 30% more daily sperm production. So by feeding bulls better early, we created bulls with larger testes, produced more sperm, and those effects remained even though we went back to a common nutrition after 30 weeks. So summary of these nutrition studies. Beef bulls fed high nutrition during calfhood, which is about 30% more energy and protein together, had more luteinizing hormone, the profound differences there. Earlier puberty, about a month, but they had larger testes and more sperm, roughly 20-25%. Those are very large differences that we produce in those bulls. There was no indications whatsoever that high nutrition during calfhood had a negative effect on semen quality or on fertility. We looked at sperm morphology, we looked at in vitro fertilization, and also seminal plasma proteins. The other thing is that nutrition after 30 weeks had limited effects on reproductive development, including an inability to overcome earlier deficits. So we need to feed the bulls really well prior to 30 weeks, and that's the time when we can influence them. Obviously, that's when most of those calves are going to be suckling their mothers, so we need to look at some sort of a creep feeding option. What about after weaning? There was a lot of work done in this area, particularly back in the 1970s and the 80s. Abnormal foot growth, laminitis, or founder in those bulls, if they were excessively fed, problems with bone and cartilage. They were lame bulls. They had ruminitis. They had liver abscesses. They had seminal vesiculitis. The bottom line here is that do not overfeed bulls after weaning. It's idiotic to feed bulls essentially a feedlot ration, get them excessively fat. There's a lot of negative outcomes. If you feed them a forage-based diet, the bulls that are most efficient, have the greatest propensity for growth, will continue to be the ones that grow the fastest. It will just have a relatively smaller difference from the bulls that are fed on very high energy diets. Summary of nutritional management. We really need to focus on that early period from calfhood through to weaning. Pre-weaning average daily gain should exceed 1.2 kilos or 2.65 pounds per day. We can, in those young bulls, we can be gaining up to about 3 pounds a day. Think about creep feeding. We encourage both energy and protein, not just strictly energy, but the two together. And after that, after weaning, have the bulls on a moderate growing diet. Do not, that is the wrong time to be feeding high energy diets to those bulls. Hind leg conformation. Most bull buyers will be going behind the bull, having a look often at the scrotum and testes. You should also have a look at the hind leg conformation. Here's the bull with a very nice conformation. And you can see a very undesirable conformation here. And especially from the side, we like to see bulls with a nice, adequate set to their hock joint. Sometimes you'll see a sickle hock, or often you'll see these post leg, the point of the hock there. We don't like these bulls that have a very narrow really lack a scrotal neck, and they have the testes tucked up. The absolute worst is these bulls with virtually no scrotal neck whatsoever. The testes are practically jammed against the body cavity. In general, these bulls are going to have semen quality issues. On a warm day, they simply cannot get those testes away from their body. If there's the testes should be more or less the same size and freely movable, have kind of normal feeling testicular tone. Sometimes there'll be a very minor rotation of one of the testes. We generally don't get too anxious about that. Measuring scrotal circumference, you can certainly do this. This is the correct way with your thumb on one side and your fingers on the other side. Do not put excessive downward pressure. You can inflate scrotal circumference 1 to 2 centimeters by really forcing the testes down. The other thing people will do is to stick their thumb in between the testes, and that again inflates scrotal circumference, so avoid doing that, as you can see with the thumb here forcing the testes apart. This is a very useful measuring device developed by Dr. Albert Barth, who's now retired, and he sells this commercially. It's reliable. You can see there's a little plunger here, and when you squeeze this, you literally put your thumb on there, and on the other side it'll be green, and then just when it starts to turn red, that's when you stop pushing, and then you measure your scrotal circumference. These are minimum scrotal circumference Society for Theragenology standards. Some people use a little bit higher standards than that. So a minimum 30 centimeters at 15 months. But some organizations will use a more rigorous system. Bull selection at weaning. You can, at weaning, measure scrotal circumference. Bulls that have really small testes at weaning, in general, are going to have small testes at a year of age. So you can do an initial cull on that basis. You can also look for things like poor conformation, cryptorchidism, all, you know, those other sorts of abnormalities, and decide which bulls are not suitable, castrate those bulls, and put them into a feeding program. Scrotal circumference, we talked about it. Forcing the testes to the bottom, moderate tension, that reliable works really well. Don't put your thumb in the middle. Why is scrotal circumference important? It's correlated with paired testis weight. In essence, it's a measurement of the weight of the testes in the live bull without castration or without recovering the testes. It's a good estimate of daily sperm production. In general, larger testes produce more sperm. And in general, larger testes produce better quality sperm. It's highly heritable. The heritability is about 0.7. If you put selection pressure on it, you can expect to make a lot of progress. Bulls with large weaning and yearling scrotal circumference will have sisters and daughters who reach puberty earlier. So it has a positive effect on the female side. There's two things about scrotal circumference. Minimum is not optimal. If it's bare minimum, okay, he meets the minimum, but is that really the genetic future of your breeding program? The other one that I really caution you with is bulls with huge scrotal circumference. If they're, you know, yearling bulls, say at 42 centimeters, we think those bulls are at greater risk of subsequently undergoing degeneration. They're just some kind of a freak, and I would be very cautious about that. The other thing to be aware of, sometimes bulls with excessive frame score can have delayed puberty. That's why they're so tall. When a bull goes through puberty, when a young fellow goes through puberty, they get a tremendous increase in growth of their long bones, and then their long bones stop growing, and they've reached their mature size. Some of those bulls with excessive frame, the reason they're so tall is they have delayed puberty, and often those bulls will have smaller scrotal circumference at weaning and at a year of age. They may have reasonable mature scrotal circumference, but they are late puberty. So I would be cautious with those bulls with a really excessive frame scores. Just a little bit about predicting male reproductive traits early on. One of the most practical ones here is scrotal circumference. There is some genetic correlations with motility, with percent normal sperm. In general, bulls that have larger testes are going to have more motile sperm and more normal sperm. So that's a very useful, practical thing. There are some other measurements that we can do. These are more laboratory-based things, collecting blood samples, probably of somewhat less practical value, but there are some things that, at least in theory, that we can measure to help us make an assessment and make a prediction of how well the bull will do in terms of reproductive function. So goal of a bull breeding soundness evaluation, really our goal is to identify the subfertile bulls. We like to say we want to identify the studs and eliminate the duds. That's really what we're doing, is we're trying to get out those bottom end bulls. The bulls that have subfertility, we have to decide, is it a transient problem that's going to hopefully get better, or is it indeed permanent? It's difficult to impossible to, if bulls are acceptable, to say, well, I think this bull is 5% better than that bull. You can do that, but you're really dreaming in technicolor. It's really designed to get rid of the bottom end bulls. To some extent, expected use of a bull may influence your decision. If you're looking for a bull to get a few heifers pregnant, and the progeny to go into a feeding program, that's one thing. If you want the bull to breed a lot of cows and to be the future of the cornerstone of your breeding program for the next 10 or 15 years, I think that's yet another thing. We do look at the bull conformation, health. We look at the reproductive tract. We look at sperm morphology and sperm motility. The thing that we don't typically look at is libido or mating ability, but those remain critically important, and we remind whoever buys the bull, they need to watch the bull out in the breeding pasture. Is he identifying cows and estrus? Is he mounting them? Is he achieving intromission? Is he getting cows bred? Minimum sperm characteristic. We like to have minimum 70% normal sperm, a maximum 20% head defects, a minimum of 30% progressively motile sperm. We'll show you here in a moment. Motility is rarely an issue on its own. Urine will reduce or eliminate sperm motility. If we get a bull, we examine him, and there's no motility. We do what we call the sniff test. We hold the tube up to our nose. We have a little sniff, see if we can smell urea, and that gives us an idea if we have urine contamination. We think, we don't know definitively, but we think if we can withhold water for a few hours before we examine bulls, we think that cuts down on urination, and we think that gives us an easier assessment of those bulls. For those of you that have looked at sperm morphology, this is a distal midpiece reflex, or we call this a DMR, indicates some kind of stress. We'll see this in young bulls. We'll see this in bulls that have gone through some kind of a stressful event. Puberty and semen quality. Puberty is defined as 50 million sperm in ejaculate, minimum 10% progressively motile, which is almost never limiting. If they got 50 million, they'll be motile. It's reached at a scrotal circumference of more or less 28 centimeters, but there are some differences amongst breeds. If a bull just reaches puberty, he's going to have lots of distal midpiece reflexes, lots of proximal droplets, head defects, etc. So even though the bull has reached puberty, he's got typically some morphological issues. Those improve over time. So as he goes through puberty for the next 2 or 3 or 4 months, more sperm per milliliter, greater motility, more morphologically normal sperm. This is some data from young bulls from 12 to 15 months of age. You can see that in this particular data set, there's a limited number of bulls at 12 months, only 40% satisfactory. Even at 13 months, only 55% satisfactory. This drives breeders crazy. They want to enter these bulls, young bulls, in these early bull sales, and if you're really rigorous, only half of them are going to pass, and that really, really gets people very anxious. The other side of that is that if we choose the young bulls that are satisfactory at 12 or 13 months, those are the early puberty bulls, and we can make some genetic progress by selecting for those bulls. Okay, the outcomes of a bull breeding soundness: satisfactory potential breeder, healthy and physically sound, meets the minimum in every single category. Scrotal circumference, at least 30% motile, and 70% plus normal, maximum 20% head defects. Unsatisfactory, he's not passing, and we think that the concerns, the problems are indeed permanent. Decision deferred, he doesn't pass today, but we think that he has a reasonable chance of improving in the future, often due to recent puberty or some sort of a recent health problem, something like that. And we usually recommend a date for reevaluation, typically 3 to 6 weeks or something like that into the future. So here's a data set from Auburn. In this particular set, more than 60% of the bulls were satisfactory, almost 30% unsatisfactory, and 10% deferred. The relative percentages here are going to vary quite a bit depending on the group of bulls you're looking at. Are you doing some eliminations early on, small scrotal circumference? How old are the bulls? All those kinds of things. Reasons for unsatisfactory or deferred. Physical exam, about 10%. You can see the vast majority of bulls fail because of scrotal circumference and or morphology. Motility is really a very uncommon reason for failing a bull. So it's, to some extent, the physical exam, mostly morphology, scrotal circumference. That's why bulls fail. Infrared thermography. We can use an infrared thermography camera. What does it do? It captures infrared radiation from a surface. In this case, we look at the scrotal skin. The temperature should decrease from the top to the bottom, and left to right it should be quite uniform. Bulls with an abnormal scrotal temperature pattern have impaired semen quality. So if a bull's got an abnormal thermogram, he's almost always going to have semen quality issues. Some bulls have a completely normal pattern, but they have other reasons that their sperm are not satisfactory. So here we have a young bull in a chute. We have an infrared thermography camera about a yard or so behind the bull, and we literally aim it at the back of the scrotum. We just need him to be standing base wide and the scrotum not moving, and then we can image those testes. It only takes a few moments. And these cameras are now are reasonably priced. We can get a camera for $3,000 or $4,000, and we can do a very quick examination. Here's a couple of scrotal thermograms. This is a very normal bull. The outline of the scrotum is here. It's really warm here over the top of the testes, and it gets cooler as we go from the top to the bottom. It gets a bit cooler. This bull has got some huge issues. Again, we can see the outline of the scrotum here, but he's got some really big warm areas. So this bull almost guaranteed is going to have problems with sperm morphology and fertility. We can capture these images in a moment. We can simply look at them. It gives us another tool. This is some work that Don Lundstra at Clay Center and Glenn Coulter at Lethbridge did a number of years ago. They took a whole group of yearling bulls. They did thermography. They took 30 bulls. These all passed a standard bull breeding soundness based on scrotal circumference, motility, morphology. So all these bulls were deemed acceptable. They expose them individual sire mating, about 18 heifers per bull, 45-day breeding season. And they divided the thermograms into normal, questionable, and abnormal. The normal ones were looked absolutely fine. The abnormal were absolutely abnormal. And the questionable were sort of in the middle. The bulls they used for breeding, all of them had passed a standard bull breeding soundness. The pregnancy rate in the normal and the questionable was 83 to 85%, and they had a lower pregnancy rate here in the abnormal, even though all of these bulls had passed a standard bull breeding soundness. Does it replace examining semen? No, but it gives us another tool. Advanced approaches to predict fertility. This is actually looking at frozen thawed semen. We're using a computer to measure the motion of the sperm. We normally do this just very subjectively, just under the microscope. Low fertility bulls had a distinctly different pattern of motility than high fertility bulls. To some extent, using this machine, we can get new ideas or additional information around motility and some predictions of fertility. Genetics and genomics. There's a big push now to look at genetic predictors. They have these SNPs, or they call them SNPs, and from that we can get estimated breeding values, and then we can get direct genomic breeding values. We're seeing more and more of this. It's more advanced on the dairy side than it is on the beef side. There are these SNPs now for sperm motility, for semen volume, total number of sperm, but these are in Holstein bulls. One of the challenges, even on the Holstein side, where we've got quite a bit of information and we think some bulls are really good, but still it's not perfect, and sometimes bulls that are ranked very high on this particular index will still subsequently fail their sire proof. This is being used more and more. It's probably more used on the dairy side because they have more information, better information. And one of the challenges on the beef side, whether you can transfer amongst breeds, that can be a challenge. And then we need to work out the relationship between genetic correlations for reproduction and for performance traits. Overall, this is more advanced on the dairy side than on the beef side. I think there's some opportunities for this going forward, but it's not the golden bullet which is going to solve all of the issues. Summary. We want to have bulls with good genetics and good phenotype. We want to manage cows well during pregnancy and calving. Have those cows, and there's all kinds of effects of nutrition during pregnancy, what it does to the fetus. We want to have those cows calving in good shape. We want to have lots of good colostrum going into those calves. Grow bulls well prior to weaning. Avoid excessive energy after weaning. There's very good evidence to support creep feeding bull calves. I think you want to be careful about creep feeding heifer calves, but we've shown that we can increase the testes and sperm production 20 to 30%. That's huge. At weaning, go through, identify bulls with small testes, bulls with conformational problems, castrate them, put them into a feeding program, and then grow out the other bulls that have more potential. Conduct bull breeding soundness evaluation. Make sure the bull meets your needs. Watch the bull breeding. Have limited breeding seasons. One guy says, my breeding season is 28 to 31 days. I have 12 of them every year. We should try to avoid that. Conduct pregnancy diagnosis. And with that, this was one of my great opportunities in my life. This is at the zoo in São Paulo, Brazil. This rhinoceros weighs about 5 to 6 imperial tons. This head is about 40 inches tall. I'm standing in kind of a moat here, being able to feed him some alfalfa hay. Really a huge thrill. This is my contact information. I'm around for the rest of the conference. Be absolutely happy to talk to you about your bulls. Thank you so much.